Thank you, Dr. Behrens. Good morning to all of you. It's certainly a pleasure to be here with you again today. I want to personally thank the Davises for the lovely evening we had out at their place last Saturday. It surely was very, very enjoyable, and I appreciate them taking us in like that. It's really a great, great activity for the evening. You might ask a question sometime, how could a brother betray a brother? I know of an individual who talked his mother into changing her will before she died and into leaving everything to him. When she died, he took the proceeds, never saw his brothers or sisters again. That's a true story. I know of the individual. And you wonder how that could happen. How could somebody do that? But you know, there's nothing new under the sun. Let's go to Matthew 24, verse 9 and 10. We know that it's happened before, these kind of things, and it will happen again. Matthew 24, verse 9. Jesus says here, then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Now, Jesus states this for a purpose. He wants to show us a little bit about what human nature is like, so that we're not shocked and surprised and offended, because that's the normal thing that happens to a person. If you get betrayed by somebody, you can get offended, especially if it was someone that you trusted, perhaps somebody who was a member of the church, you thought, and they betrayed you. Yet Jesus says in a future time there's going to be a lot of betrayal that's taking place, and people will hate one another. And I think he's warning people, saying, don't put your trust, too much trust, in a person. Don't put too much trust so that you become offended with God, because that's often what happens. People don't blame the other person. Eventually it turns to bitterness, and oftentimes turns to bitterness against God, because they'll say, why did you let this happen to me, or whatever. God, you should have been able to prevent this, or whatever. Yet things like this, brethren, are not new. There's really nothing new under the sun, in a sense, as Solomon said. Let's look at the life of Joseph for a little, for a few instances. What starts this whole episode with Joseph and his brothers? We know the story. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 37. Genesis 37 and verse 1. We're familiar with the story. Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph here was 17 years old. Let's go to verse 2. 17 years old when this began, and he was feeding the flock with his brothers. The lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now it's interesting that this whole episode kind of starts with Joseph kind of being like a tattletale, I guess, if you want to put it that way. He starts off bringing a bad report to his father. Now, we don't know what this report was, but children tend to do this. And even, I guess, when you're 17 years old, you still tend to do this, trying to perhaps make your brothers look bad and make you look better somehow. That's oftentimes what the motivation is behind kids telling stories on each other, right? You want to make yourself look better and the others to look worse. So we don't know whether this could have been actually an important story. We don't know. The report could have been something quite important, possibly. Maybe Joseph was worried that his father was going to lose a bunch of his livestock or something because the kids, the other boys, were fooling around, or they weren't careful, or we don't know the story exactly, but we do know what began to happen because of this. When you see it, you know right away, oh, let's see, what are the boys going to think of Joseph? How are they going to look at him? Verse 3, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. Now, right away, you know, Joseph was favored, you know, was given favor by his father. And that's one of the first lessons I think we can learn from these stories. One of the worst things you can do with children is to play favorites. Because right away you begin to produce hatred in the other kids. It's almost automatically. Jealousy comes into it, especially making him a special coat. You know, the boys would be reminded of this every day by him wearing this coat. God, our father loves him more than he loves me. And so you see the first lesson from Joseph then. That's why I titled this sermon today, Lessons from Joseph. Playing favorites is devastating to children. Devastating. And not only children. This doesn't occur just with children either, or at all. It occurs with adults as well. Person has to be careful of that too. If you're a boss, or if you have a position of authority of any sort, you have to be careful you don't play favorites, because you produce hatred right away. It begins, not always, but it can do that very easily in other people. And so you cause bad fruits because of doing that. Verse 4, so what did the boys think? When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him, could not speak peaceably to him, couldn't even talk to him in a normal fashion, in a peaceful way. So, you know, I'm sure, and you know, that Jacob never intended that, right? He never would have intended that, to bring hatred between his children. He wouldn't have wanted that to happen. Yet that's what was produced. Now, as you go along, if you were Joseph, and you knew your brothers didn't like you, and were speaking to you in nasty terms all the time, and couldn't speak peaceably to you, what would you do if you had a dream? What would you do? Joseph was not known for his wisdom at this time. He was a young boy. What does he do? He goes and has this dream. Verse 5, Joseph has a dream and he tells it to his brothers. And they hated him even more. Sometimes it's better, you see, not to tell everything you know. Which is lesson number 2. Don't always tell somebody everything you know. It doesn't pay off. For instance, when you first come into the knowledge of the truth, what do most people do? Right? They just let it go. They let everybody have it. Doesn't matter if it's your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, friends, people at work, your boss. You tell them everything, right? And then what happens? Somehow they don't speak peaceably to you anymore. That's what happens normally. You cause problems for yourself. It's a good lesson. You see, if we had read this and we had learned this lesson earlier, most of us probably wouldn't have offended a lot of people that we might have offended over the years. Usually it happens earlier on in when your first love of the knowledge is so great you can't keep quiet about it. You want to tell everyone about it, and you cause problems. So anyway, here's Joseph. He has a dream. He tells his brothers, so they hate him even more. But he says, please hear this dream which I've dreamed. Wouldn't quit. Verse 6, so there we were. Verse 7, binding sheaves in the field, and then behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. Indeed, your sheaves all stood around and bowed to my sheaf. Now, Joseph would have been thinking, he probably would have thought, now this isn't going to make them very happy. Maybe I shouldn't tell them this. But he kept on, right? So his brother's reaction, shall you indeed reign over us, in verse 8, or shall you indeed have dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Verse 9, Joseph isn't finished yet, right? He's not satisfied yet. He has to tell him another dream. So he dreams another dream and tells it to his brothers and said, look, I have dreamed another dream, and this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me. Let's make it even worse. See if I can make them even more angry. So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him in verse 10. Said, what is this dream you've dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to earth before you? and his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So lesson two then is, it is not necessary to always tell everything you know. You don't have to tell everybody everything. Joseph brought more hatred upon himself by telling these dreams. Now it's sort of the inevitable then begins to happen. Let's go to verse number 18. When they see him coming far off, he was sent to find his brothers and see how they were doing. Even before he came near them, in verse 18, they conspired against him to kill him. And then they said to one another, look, this dreamer is coming. This is what can happen when you get angry to the point where it develops into hatred. Hard to believe that you could hate your brother this much. But that's what happens when the bitterness keeps piling up and piling up, and anger keeps developing, becomes stronger and stronger. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. Hatred can cause just about anything to happen. So here they are, their own brother, conspiring to kill him. Verse 20, let's kill him now, cast him to some pit, and we'll say some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams. Now Reuben tries to save him in verse 21. He heard it, and he delivered them out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him. And he was doing this to try to save him, actually. He was going to come back and get him later and rescue him and take him back to his father. He says that he might deliver him out of their hands, bring him back to his father. So it came to pass in verse 23, when Joseph had come to his brothers, they stripped him of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him, symbol of their hatred, ripped it off him, basically. So they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. Here comes Judah, the opportunist, luckily for Joseph. Verse 26, Judah said to his brothers, what profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh. And his brothers listened. Verse 28, Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit, sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. So they took Joseph to Egypt. Did you ever notice that it was 20 pieces of silver? 20 pieces of silver. Kind of interesting. That figure is quite significant, isn't it, when you think about Christ being sold for the 20 shekels of silver or 20 pieces of silver. There's a comment later on in Genesis 42 about what took place here as well, Joseph pleading with them not to do this. Let's go to Genesis 42 and read that. It doesn't cover every detail. Genesis 42 and verse 21, it doesn't give you every detail of what was going on, but here was Joseph. You know, it was sort of, the way it's written is kind of cold and dry, but here's what Joseph really was doing. Verse 21, when they said to one another, this was after the brothers showed up in Egypt and were trying to get grain, etc. And here's what they said. We are truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. So it wasn't cut and dried where Joseph just headed off to Egypt without saying anything. He was pleading for his life, pleading with his brothers, please don't do this. Pretty tough situation, and they, of course, had this guilt on their conscience. They said, we would not hear, therefore this distress has come upon us. And Reuben said, didn't I speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy? You would not listen, therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. It was a pretty tough scene when Joseph was being dragged away. And see, the type, see, Christ didn't want to go through what he had to go through. He was pleading with the Father, is there any other way? He went back to the Father and asked three different times, is there some other way? I don't want to have to go through this. Jesus, of course, knew the picture. He knew exactly what was going to happen to him. I don't think Joseph knew exactly what was going to happen to him. Yet he was still fulfilling, in a sense, a kind of a type. And I thought it was quite interesting to read that it was, a guilty conscience on his brothers. You know, that was playing on their mind all of those years. You know, we sold our brother into slavery. And they had this guilty kind of conscience and sort of repented in a way of doing it, I guess, if you want to put it that way, just as Judas did. Judas tried to repent, in a sense. He didn't know how to repent exactly. He went and killed himself, hung himself, because of what he had done. So these boys, these young men, and now older men, felt pretty bad about what they had done. Let's go on with the story then, back to Genesis 39. What starts happening here? Joseph ends up in Egypt as a slave. And it says he's Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh. This is Genesis 39, verse 1. Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. Verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, and his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. And then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. Verse 5, so it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Verse 6, thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had even, except for the bread which he ate. Joseph was responsible for everything. Now this comes to lesson number 3. God will be with us even in adversity. Even when things go wrong. When something is bad, something bad happens to us, some trial takes place in our lives, oftentimes we think, well, God has abandoned us. Where is God? And yet, God will bless us even in adversity. Even when things are going wrong, God is there. He will make sure that even though the trial is taking place, it isn't too hard for us to take. He says that. Even if there is a trial, I'll make sure that you'll be able to stand it, you'll be able to take it, you'll be able to survive it. And in this case, he even blessed Joseph when he was right in the middle of the trial. You think, you know, how can you sort of say this? I'm in slavery. In the middle of a country I don't even know, and I'm in slavery. And yet God is with him. God is blessing him and taking care of him. And indeed gives him responsibility so that he's now taking care of Potiphar's house. He has control of everything that the man had. God is with us even in adversity, and he will be with us even in adversity. Though he doesn't remove the trial. See, most of the time human beings would think, okay, if God is with me, he'll take the trial away. Whether it's sickness, whatever it might be. We think God should take the trial away. That's the way the human mind works. But that isn't how it happens. Oftentimes the trial continues, yet God is with us. And he will be with us even in adversity, even when there's troubles and problems. Now, with Joseph, just when things are getting better, right? Everything's kind of improving. I'm now in charge of the house. I've got all this stuff. I'm not, you know, in prison. I'm doing just great. Just when everything seems to look better, what happens? Verse 7, Genesis 39. Came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused, verse 8, and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. He has committed all that he has to my hand. There's no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness? And look what he says. And sin against God. He didn't say, and sin against him, my master. He said, I can't do this great wickedness and sin against God. See, there's a great lesson here. The lesson is, sin is always against God. It's not against the person. You see, you know the way the world works, the way the world situation ethics work? As long as you're not hurting anybody, it's okay, right? As long as you're not hurting anyone, particularly, whatever I do here, as long as I'm not hurting another human being, it's fine. I can do whatever I want. This kind of shoots that in the head, doesn't it? Pretty fast. Sin is against God, always. Though people might get hurt, you might hurt somebody else, you might not, that's irrelevant. Totally irrelevant, because sin always is against God. Verse 11. So it happens about this time, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me," but he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. What was the wrong with this scene? What was the problem with this picture? See, Joseph should not have gone in the house by himself. Shouldn't have been in there. He knew what she was up to, knew what she'd been trying to do. He should never have gone in the house there by himself. Should have had somebody with him. He should have had either some of the other workers there or whoever it might have been as a witness. Because what happens when he did this, there was no witness. And guess what happens to Joseph? He was aware that she might try something. He should have been thinking about it. Shouldn't have been alone in the house. So lesson five. We should never put ourselves in questionable circumstances. Be very careful what we face. We know that 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 18, if you want to turn there, 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 18, it's a good principle to always keep in mind. 1 Corinthians 6 verse 18, flee sexual immorality is the way the New King James puts it. Flee it. Get away from it. Stay away from any circumstance where there might be a temptation there. Don't go into a situation where there's a possibility of temptation or some difficulty that could come up. Learn that lesson. Flee sexual immorality. Stay away from situations like that so that you're not caught into some difficult situation. So let's go back again, Genesis chapter 39. We see the result of this. So it was when she saw that he had left his garment with her in hand and fled outside, she calls to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside." So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. You know the story. She speaks, then verse 17, she spoke to him with words like these, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came into me to mock me. So it happened as I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled outside." And so it was when his master, you know who he's going to believe, right? Who's he going to believe? Well, obviously his wife. So it was when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, "Your servant did to me after this manner," that his anger was aroused. Verse 20, Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And here he was in the prison then. Now, lesson five. When things go wrong in someone's life, it may not be their fault at all. It may not be anything they have done at all. Sort of like Job with his friends, you know, the friends in quote. How do you like friends like that? "Well, Job, you must have done something. Must be your fault. You must have done something." And I'm sure if this was a situation where Joseph went through this and he had some of the people around him probably said, "See, well, look what he must have done it. He must have done it, obviously." Joseph, she wouldn't lie. She wouldn't dare lie about something like that and falsely accuse him. So, lesson. When things go wrong in someone's life, it may not be their fault at all. Human nature likes to apportion blame to others and assume it is their fault. Now, why is that? Why is that we like doing that? Because we all like doing that. Maybe not consciously, but somewhere in our minds, we tend to do that. If something goes wrong with somebody, we think, "Oh, boy, there must have been, oh, you know what they're like." The way the human brain works, our mind works, we make ourselves feel better when we think that other people are worse. or they got what's coming to them. And you've probably heard that before, too. In some cases, may not be true at all. They may not have done anything wrong whatsoever. There may be something working out that nobody's aware of. Now, Jesus explains about accidents and things that happen. He used an example to show, I think, what human beings tend to do, what they would tend to do. And it's Luke chapter 13 and verse 4. Luke chapter 13 and verse 4. Good. It's always good to remember some of these scriptures, because Christ knew exactly what we were going to be like. Jesus knew what our human nature was like. And so he was trying to tell these people, look, let's go back to verse 13. They were present at that season. This is Luke 13, verse 1. They were present at that season, some who told him about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices. Now, what were they telling? Why were they telling him that? Probably saying, oh, yeah, look at those people. They got kind of caught, you know. Maybe with the wrong attitude. Maybe they were telling him things, making comments about these people. And Jesus answered and said to them, do you suppose that these Galileans were worse sinners than all other Galileans? You think they're any worse than anybody else because they suffered such things? I tell you, no. But unless you repent, you will all likewise perish. Or those 18 on whom the tower in Siloam fell and killed them, do you think that they were worse sinners than all other men who dwelt in Jerusalem? Do you think they got what they were, you know, what was coming to them? Jesus says, I tell you, no. He says, you're no different. That's really what he's telling everybody. We are no different, no better, or no worse than anybody else. Because everybody has come under the penalty of the death penalty. Everyone has come under that. There isn't a human being who's righteous. There is none righteous, no, not one. We can do righteousness. There's nothing, obviously, we can do what is right. But still, he's trying to give a balance to this and say, look, don't point fingers at other people. Just because something has gone wrong in their life doesn't make them any worse than you. Jesus is trying to balance us out. Let's go back again. Genesis 39 and verse 21. Here are blessings in adversity, again, chapter 39, verse 21. He's now in the prison. Now, try to imagine the prison. Not like the prisons today. What do they call some of those places, you know? What was the one they called on Vancouver Island? We were out there, and I forget what they called it, some real, you know, five-star hotel name kind of thing. Because they've got whatever it is. They got golf courses, and they've got the prisons back then weren't quite like that. When you got put, if you saw that, which movie was it? Ben-Hur. You saw the movie Ben-Hur, and you saw the prisons there. That's what they were more like. Down just holes in the ground where it's just black, basically black all day. You never had any sunlight. And like the two, his mother and sister, remember when they were in prison there? And they said, well, nobody's seen them for 2 years or 3 years. They've been in this prison for that length of time. He says, I know they're there because they take their food. We put the food there. That's more like what it was. Black holes in the ground, basically. Horrible places. And you, when you see what happened here, when Joseph's in there, why? He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything to speak of, to deserve anything like that. Any more than you or I did anything to deserve to be in a prison like that. Yet he's there. Genesis 39, verse 21. The Lord was with Joseph, showed him mercy. Now you'd think, and I'd think, and any human being would think, well, if God was going to show us mercy, he'd get me out of here. I wouldn't be in this place. I'd be out of here right now. God would get me out of here. If he's fair. Wouldn't you think that? We'd all think that. That's what we think. But that isn't the way it was working, because there was something else being done here. The Lord was with Joseph, showed him mercy. He gave him favor in sight of the keeper of the prison. Verse 22, the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. He was in charge of everything. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Again, blessings in adversity, mercy, love, even in adversity, even when you're in a mess. So, now after all of this goes on, I was thinking about Potiphar and his wife. I was thinking, we know the story as it goes on, but I'll just interject this. I wonder what conversation Joseph had with Potiphar after Joseph was made number two in Egypt. Because Potiphar was the captain of the guard. Joseph would have had contact with him. Joseph comes out and he's number two under Pharaoh, in charge of everything in Egypt. I wonder what the conversation was with Potiphar and Joseph. I wonder what he said. I wonder what Potiphar's wife felt like. Makes you kind of wonder, you know, how, maybe we better watch what we say. Everybody, every human being better just watch what they say, watch what's in here, because you never know what's going to happen. You never really know. You don't know what somebody that you're dealing with, you don't know where they're going to end up. You have no idea. You know, oftentimes it says when you're in business, you know, if you're a boss, you better be nice to those people who are under you, because one day they might be your boss. And they might be. You just never really know. But I thought it was kind of interesting. Crime doesn't really pay. Potiphar, it was your wife who was lying. It wasn't me. I wonder how that conversation went anyway. So, another lesson. Number six. No matter how black it looks, and it would have been quite black when Joseph was tossed into prison right off the bat, put in chains, it would have looked pretty black. But no matter how black it looks, when God is involved, there is always light at the end of the tunnel, because he says he will never leave us. When Joseph was in the prison and it was black, there was somebody there with him. God was there. God was there because God was working with Joseph. Hebrews 13 and verse 5, always a very encouraging scripture to keep in the back of our minds. No matter what goes on, no matter what takes place, Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5, let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. Be content where we are. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will be there. Doesn't matter how black it is, doesn't matter what it looks like, there's always going to be light at the end of the tunnel, even though you can't see it. When we went out to the coast, there's one tunnel on the Rogers Pass Highway. But you come in there, and it's an older tunnel, and they haven't put very good lighting in there at all. And you just go in there, and it goes black, goes dark. And you're steering, and you're kind of, where are we? You know, and your headlights don't help because there's still enough light that they don't work properly. And it just sort of jolts you. It's kind of black all of a sudden. But you know there's light. You just keep going. It's sort of like when you hit a snowstorm on the highway, you know there's this big, you know, coming, sometimes you're going down the highway and you have this big, just a bunch of snow goes across the road and just blocks you right out. It's totally a whiteout. You can't see where you're going, but you just got to keep going straight. Don't turn, don't slam the brakes on, just keep going and you'll come out of it right away. A lot of people hit the brakes, slow down, and then the snow lasts longer, and then they panic and they start turning the steering wheel and they don't know where they're going. Would have been better just to go straight through. Just hang on to the steering wheel, keep it straight, and just go straight through. And all of a sudden, bam, you're out of it again. And it's sort of like that with God. Sometimes it's black, sometimes there's a whiteout. You can't see anything, but you just keep going. You have to keep going, because there always will be light at the end of the tunnel, because God is with us. Okay, let's go to Genesis 40, verse 1. Here's the story of the butler, the Pharaoh's butler and the baker. And we know the story of this one, where the butler has a dream and the baker has a dream. And Joseph sees them kind of troubled about it, so he says, well, what are your dreams? And they explain them, and Joseph explains the dreams, interprets the dreams. Now, so what that tells me is that Joseph is in a right attitude, a right approach with God. He has the confidence that God will give him the interpretation. He says to these men, oh, just tell me the dreams. I'll interpret them for you. So Joseph isn't sitting there saying, "Why has God done this to me? Why am I sitting in this prison? I've got chains on. I'm getting miserable and bitter and angry." God isn't doing it, or Joseph isn't doing that. He couldn't have been doing that, because God was with him and taking care of them. And right now, he's got confidence enough to say, "Tell me your dreams and I'll interpret them for you." So Joseph is able to have, he must have this relationship with God that is continuing to give him the confidence and help that he needs. And so he tells the story, he tells the butler that he's going to be restored, but the baker's going to be hung. And that happens, and then the butler forgets about Joseph when he gets back to Pharaoh. He forgets all about Joseph, doesn't say anything about him. So here he is, Genesis chapter 41 then. 2 whole years go by again. 2 more years. Sitting down in the prison, even though his situation has improved, he's still sitting in prison. You know, the time goes by. So then Pharaoh has the dream. When you realize what's going on is that God is setting the whole thing up. The whole story. God is working the thing out all the way through. And so Pharaoh now has the dream. And he dreams about the 7 fat cows, the 7 thin cows, and then the 7 fat heads on stalks and the 7 thin heads. And of course he doesn't know the meaning of these dreams. And Joseph, all of a sudden, instead of being in prison now, all of a sudden Joseph becomes number 2 in Egypt with all total power. Pharaoh says nobody else is going to be close to Joseph's power except the Pharaoh himself. And he says it'll only be in the throne of Egypt that I will be greater than you. So Joseph has all the power. You know, what an awesome thing to happen to a person. Joseph had better see what's happened over through these years, how much Joseph has changed. So he was 17 years old when all of this started. How many years went by? Ooh, you know, when you think about it, all of this time, 13 years goes by before Joseph changes, before he gets into a position of absolute authority and power. Joseph has changed a lot. He's not a 17-year-old boy anymore. So one of the great things about these situations is not so much the circumstances change, but how much the person changes. And when you see this, you see what Joseph has gone through, you realize he's now 30 years old. Genesis 41 and verse 46. After this goes on, the Pharaoh recognizes that God is with Joseph and says now, verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. We think we've had a trial in our lives. Sometimes trials go on, a couple of years or 3 or 4 years, and then often they're over again. Joseph's going through this thing. It's 13 years has gone by. 13 whole years have gone by. And Joseph is now 30 years old. So it says he has the absolute power then. The Pharaoh has made him, go back to verse 42, he even gave him his own signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. Clothed him in garments of fine linen, put a gold chain around his neck. So Joseph has been changed from prisoner overnight, instantly. See what God can do if he wants to? God can change anything like that. Do you think God can do a work at the end time if he wants to? You know, he could have, boom, just like that, infamy like that. If God wants that to happen, where somebody goes and visits Bush or Kretchen, like that, instantly, God can do it anytime he wants. Within 24 hours, he could have somebody standing in the House of Commons speaking to them. Or the Congress in the U.S. or the Senate. God can do anything anytime he wants. I believe he's going to do a witness, and he's going to do it in power. But the main thing, of course, is what was Joseph supposed to be doing all of this time? Joseph was supposed to be changing. And he was. At 17 years old, he would not have been capable of handling the responsibility of ruling Egypt. It's basically what he was doing, just under Pharaoh. He wouldn't have had the responsibility. It takes time and it takes trials for people to change. And that's the important thing for us to remember. Lesson number 8. Trials may go on a lot longer than we like, but they do come to a conclusion. Some trials might last us till we die, possibly. Some trial we have might be there with us until we die, but it will be concluded in the resurrection then. If it's some physical problem or something like that, God will take care of it. It's interesting here that Joseph is 30, because often in the Bible, God doesn't use anybody until they are 30 years old. It just seems like it's a kind of an age that God aims at for using people. It must have seemed like an eternity to Joseph, though, 13 years. Seems like a long time. You know, you think back 13 years ago, you know, where were we 13 years ago? Times have changed a lot in 13 years. A lot of things have changed. Where were we 13 years ago? Just on our way to Toronto, I think. Just on our way to Toronto in 1990. So, you know, and all the things that have happened since then, people that we've met and known and people who have died and trials and things that have happened in that length of time. And here's Joseph who has gone through all this kind of thing. Anyway, trials will go on sometimes a lot longer than we like, lesson 8, but they do come to a conclusion. Now the plot thickens here. Let's go to Genesis chapter 42. Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt. Jacob says to his sons, "Why do you look at one another? What are you doing? Why are you guys just hanging around here?" The famine gets really bad, and Joseph's brothers come to Egypt to buy grain. Now verse 6. Remember what they said back then, quote, "Are we going to have to bow down before you?" Interesting, isn't it? Way back when he was 17 years old, "Are we going to have to bow down before you?" Yeah, tell us another story. Verse 6, now Joseph was governor over the land. It was he who sold to all the people of the land. Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. Isn't it amazing how God makes things happen, things work out the way that God says they are going to work out? Now, we know the story that it goes through here, that Benjamin stayed behind, and Joseph finds out, "Is Benjamin, you know, do you have any more brothers? Is your father still alive, etc., etc.?" They don't know who he is, but he knows who they are, and he can understand what they're saying, and they think he only speaks, you know, Egyptian, but he can hear what they're actually saying because they're speaking Hebrew, and he knows Hebrew. So he can, when you think about it, he can hear all that they say. They can't. They don't know that he can't. So they're going through all this kind of thing. And so he finds out that Benjamin is there, and he tells them that, you know, the little tricks he pulled. He put their money back in their sacks and that kind of thing. And he sends them back home again. Genesis 43 and verse 8. Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. And he remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them and said to them, "You are spies then." So he works it out, trying to accuse them, just say he's doing all this as a kind of a, I guess, a payback, a little bit of payback for what they did to him. And he's accusing them of being spies. He says, verse 15, "In this manner you should be tested then by the life of Pharaoh. You shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here." He wanted to see Benjamin, basically. He wanted to actually know if he's still alive and wanted to see him. Verse 16, "Send one of you and let him bring your brother, and you shall be kept in prison that your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you. Or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." So he put them all together in prison 3 days. Joseph said to them the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house, but you go and carry grain for the famine of your houses. Bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified and you shall not die." And so this is when they go through this thing about the guilt, the guilty conscience, right? "Oh, yeah, this is coming upon us now because of what we did to Joseph, and we should have listened when he was pleading with us, and we shouldn't have done that." And so Joseph is overwhelmed, of course. Verse 24, he turns away and weeps. And he returned to them again and talked with them. He took Simeon from their eyes, bound him before their eyes. Joseph gives a command, gives them their grain, but he also puts the money back in the sacks as well, which disturbs them. They really have this guilty conscience. Verse 28, it's a good lesson, isn't it? So, and something like that. You know, people remember things. When you do something wrong, it goes in here, and it's hard to get rid of that. Thankfully, God allows us to repent, and we can clear our consciences. But I can remember a story my dad told me. This one story, And it was like 75 years after it happened. He was telling me the story. 75 years later, he remembered when he was a little kid, and he went into the stores, and they had these open jars where the food used to be. They had candies and stuff like that. And he remembered reaching down and taking some maple buds. He even knew the candies. He even remembered the kind of candies. Took some maple buds, just reached down, took some, and put them in his pocket. And went home and ate these maple buds. And here he is, 75 years later. The guy who owned the store was dead. Most of the people that he knew was dead were dead. And here he is, still remember this. And he felt guilty to that day, taking a few maple buds. How your conscience works. If you have a good conscience and you don't sear it with a hot iron, it works. But it'll be there for who suffers? Did the storekeeper ever suffer because of the maple buds? Nah, two or three maple buds or whatever. He wouldn't have missed them, wouldn't even have known they were gone. But my dad had it on his mind, and 75 years later he tells me about it. Still had it there. And it just shows you how the conscience can work. Here they were. He said to his brothers, verse 28, my money has been restored, and there it is in my sack. And then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? Joseph really, in the long run, really didn't suffer as much as the brothers did with their guilty consciences. You can imagine what that would have done to you. All of those years, you're thinking, where's my brother? What happened to my brother? What did I do? How did I do such a stupid thing? So then, again, they go back home, and they use up all the food. Let's go to chapter 43. The famine was severe again, and so, verse 8, Judah says to Israel, his father, send the lad with me. Because Jacob was trying to get them to go down and get more grain, and they said, we are not going unless we can take Benjamin, because this man told us, do not see my face again unless your brother is with you. So they relayed the story to Israel, but the famine got so bad that they had to go and get food. Verse 8, Judah says to Israel, his father, send the lad with me. We will arise and go that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. So finally, Israel relents and lets him go. Let's go on a little bit. Joseph here sees them again. And let's go on. They took double money in their hand. Verse 15, arose, went down to Egypt again, and they stood before Joseph. Joseph saw Benjamin with them. He said to the steward of his house, take these men to my home and slaughter an animal and make ready. These men will dine with me at noon. So Joseph is kind of even doing a few more things to try to, I guess, you know, let the lesson really sink home with them. What they did was pretty rotten, pretty awful, and pretty evil. So he's putting on a meal for them. So the man did as Joseph ordered in verse 17, brought the men into Joseph's house. Now the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and they said, it is because of the money which was returned in our sacks the first time, guilty consciences, that we are brought in so that he may make a case against us and seize us to take us as slaves with our donkeys. Verse 19, when they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him at the door. Verse 20, he said, oh, sir, we indeed came down the first time to buy food. They're trying to talk their way out of the problem. Verse 21, it happened when we came to the encampment that we opened our sacks, and there each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we brought it back to you in our hand. We brought down other money in our hands to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks. But he said, peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money. And then he brought Simeon out to them. So the man brought the men into Joseph's house. Verse 24, he gave them water, and they washed their feet. He gave their donkeys feed, and they made the present ready for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that he would eat, or that they would eat bread there. When Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house and bowed down before him to the earth. And Joseph then starts asking questions. He asked them about their well-being and said, is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? They answered, your servant, our father, is in good health. He is still alive. And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves. Then he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and he said, is this your younger brother of whom you spoke to me? He said, God be gracious to you, my son. So his heart yearned for his brother, so Joseph made haste and sought somewhere to weep, and he went into his chamber and wept there, washed his face and came out and served the food. Now, Joseph was, again, playing little tricks of them. Verse 32, they set him by a place by himself and then by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat food with the Hebrews. Kind of ironic that here's Joseph, a Hebrew, in charge of Egypt, virtually, but they can't sit down and have a meal with him because he was a Hebrew. And it says, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. So they sat before him, again, playing mind tricks with them a little bit, the firstborn according to his birthright and the youngest according to his youth. Joseph had him put in such a way from the oldest to the youngest, and they didn't know that he knew of them, of course, or who they were. It says, the men looked at in astonishment at one another. So he took servings to them from before him, and Benjamin's serving was five times as much as any of theirs, so they drank and were merry with him. So the story goes on. Joseph really kind of pours it on in a way. He puts his personal drinking cup in Benjamin's sack, Genesis 44 and verse 1. And he sends his steward after them, then finds the cup, and you know the story. He accuses them of stealing it, brings them back. Verse 18, Judah pleads with Joseph for Benjamin's life, tells him the story about how he had to tell his father that he was going to be surety for him for whatever. Genesis 45, Joseph finally lets him know who he is. Let's go there. Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. He cried out, make everyone go out. So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. What a time. You can imagine what his brothers were going through now. I am Joseph. I'm the one you sold. You sold into slavery. Do you know what's happened to me? But he didn't do that. Kind of amazing what he did. Joseph lets him know he couldn't restrain. He weeps out loud. The Egyptians, the house of Pharaoh knows about it. Verse 9, or lesson 9, I should say. Lesson number 9. Make sure you learn the right lesson from a trial. Be sure that we learned the right lesson. Joseph could have said, God has delivered these characters into my hands so I can kill them and get revenge. He would have been justified. Had he been sort of like a normal carnal human being, he could have been easily justified, just said, well, I might just torture them for a while first. Or I might, you know, mentally he did torture them a little bit. But he could have easily killed them. He could have easily said, God has delivered these idiots into my hands. I can kill them now. And it'll serve them right. But he didn't do that. He just would not do that. Verse 5, but now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. See, Joseph learned the right lesson. He got the right lesson from this trial. He says, don't worry about it, for God sent me before you to preserve life. And he did preserve a lot of life that way. With the famine that would have hit Egypt, if they had not have been prepared, there would have been hundreds of thousands of people dying, and cattle and sheep and everything else. Well, they didn't keep sheep, I guess, but they kept cattle. There would have been an awful lot of animals that would have died, a lot of people that would have starved to death. Verse 6, he says, for these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by great deliverance. Isn't that incredible? He could have become angry and bitter, and he could have turned away from God. Could have done all of those things, but he didn't. He learned the right lesson. All of those years through the trial, he learned the right lessons. He learned the proper conclusion. God was working something out here, and he was working it out for the good of people. See, verse 8, he says, look, it was not you who sent me here. What? Well, sure it was. They did it. No, it wasn't you, he says. He says, God sent me here. God was doing the whole thing. But how many times do human beings see that? How many times do we really see that? Do we really say, when a trial hits us, oh, this is something that God is working out, and I just have to, you know, learn the right lessons from this? No, we usually, what's going on? We usually don't react quite the right way. Maybe later on. It's because we don't understand it at the time. I don't know if Joseph really understood at the time when they were selling him. If he's pleading hey, please don't do this. Don't send me away. I don't want to go. I won't see Dad anymore. Please, guys, don't do this. He's pleading for his life. But yet, as time went on, Joseph changed. He went into the trial. The trial took time to change him. It took a lot of time. Years and years and years. But later on, Joseph learned that it was God who did it. And he says, he has made me, verse 8, a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Joseph was all-powerful, incredible. So lesson number 10, God's purpose will be fulfilled. God's purpose will be fulfilled. No matter how long it takes, no matter what the trial is, no matter whether it's some kind of a problem or difficulty, no matter what it is that's going on in our lives, God's will be fulfilled. The purpose that God has is going to be fulfilled. So what happens? It's a happy ending to the story. Israel, let's go to Genesis 46 and verse 1. Israel took his journey with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night, and he said, Jacob, Jacob. And he answered, here I am. And he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. See the whole thing? Right? When it started, and you just saw a bunch of boys fighting and jealousy, you didn't see God was going to make a great nation in Egypt. That's why Joseph was being sold into slavery. You know, think of it at that time. Joseph would not have thought of that. And yet, that's what was going to happen, and that's what was going to take place. The whole thing was going to be set up in such a way so that the great nation of Israel is going to be formed, the Passover was going to be given, the Sabbath days, the commandments, all of this, the great miracles that God was going to... See, God's purpose is always going to be fulfilled. His plan, that was his plan. And the plan was being worked out by a simple thing like Joseph and his brothers and jealousy and being sold into Egypt. God's plan will be fulfilled. It's just a matter of time. So Israel went to Egypt, was established there, everything being set up exactly as God planned it. Now, how much did Joseph know about the plan of God or his role in it? We don't know. But it seems like at the beginning, he didn't seem to know much about it. If you're pleading for your life and please don't send me, I don't want to go, don't sell me into slavery, probably didn't know all that much at the beginning. And oftentimes, when we have a trial, we don't know exactly what God has in mind. We don't know. Sometimes things hit us like, oh, I've got to what? I've got to do this, and you're all upset, and you don't know what's happening. And yet, 10 years later, you think, boy, I'm sure glad that happened. I'm sure glad that happened. If that hadn't happened, this wouldn't have happened, and this, and this, and this, and I wouldn't have learned this, and this, and known these people, or whatever. And so we don't always know exactly what's going on. But Joseph, though he didn't know necessarily all about his plan of God or his role in it, he certainly came through shining like pure gold, didn't he? He sure came out of the trial just shining brightly because he never got angry or bitter. He never got to the point where he was going to take revenge on his brothers or anybody else. Joseph was loving and kind, even though he taught them a lesson. Nothing wrong with teaching somebody a lesson. But the fact that he came through and said what he said. Let's go along here. It says, after Genesis chapter 49, after Israel blesses his sons, he goes through all this before he dies, he blesses his sons, he tells them what's going to happen to them in the last days. These are incredible scriptures. This all takes place in Egypt when Jacob is there. And he tells them all about what's going to happen in the last days to all of his different sons, the tribes that we know are that are the tribes of Israel today, who are spread out around the world. So what does Joseph say then when his brothers are still worried that he might take revenge? See, after Israel dies, his brothers think, uh-oh, Dad's gone. Now what is he going to do? So So they're worried and they're upset and they don't know what Joseph is going to do. In verse 19, Joseph says to them, fantastic statement. Joseph says to them, do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? He says, I'm not the judge. Joseph has a lot of understanding now, tremendous amount of understanding. He says, I'm not your judge. I am not in the place of God. Even though I could take your lives, even though I could execute you right now, he says, I am not going to judge you that way or condemn you. He says, for am I in the place of God? Verse 20, here's what you thought. As for you, you meant evil against me. See, oftentimes that can happen. Somebody can think that they're really getting you because they don't like you or whatever it is, and they're going to try to do something to, you know, disrupt your life or try to hurt you or tell false stories about you, all this kind of stuff. They're doing it because they're evil. There's no way around that. I mean, there are evil people who will do that stuff, false accusations, all of that kind of stuff. He says, as for you, you meant evil against me. That's what your motivation was. But he says, God meant it for good. And oftentimes that's what happens. Even when trials hit us because somebody else is evil and somebody does something wrong, it works out for the best. Always seems to happen that way, doesn't it? There'll be good fruits that will come out of it. In order to bring about, he says, God meant it for good in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive. He says, God worked it out so that we could save thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. Now, therefore, do not be afraid. He says, I'm going to provide for you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. See, that's the godly way to do it, isn't it? They spoke mean to him, mean in a mean way. They couldn't even talk peaceably to him when they sold him. Well, how did he return? What did he return for their evil? Nothing but good. He spoke kindly to them, took care of them, provided for them. So they're pretty good lessons when you think of what Joseph was able to do. Joseph was treated very badly by his brothers. He was alone at 17 years old, in slavery because of them. When things started looking better, they got worse through wrongful accusation. Through all of this, we see a man growing in God's grace and understanding. And through it all, he keeps his confidence in God, and it pays off. There's no bitterness in Joseph, though he could have been bitter. He takes no revenge, though he had the right and the means. Joseph remains, brethren, a shining example that we can learn lessons from. Let's learn these lessons from Joseph.
If you'd rise with your hymnals, we're going to have a closing hymn. Turning to page number 14, we'll sing There Is Joy in